We're going to start with Romans chapter 13. And we're going to read a passage out of Romans 13 at verse 9. This is a passage that sometimes is referred to as the Golden Rule. Paul says, "For this you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. And if there is any other commandment, it is summed up in saying, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law." Much of our life is related to dealing with other people. We do that at home, we do that at work, if we're in school, we do it at school, just walking down the street. There's a relationship with other people. And oftentimes we need the cooperation of others in a variety of different ways. But the problem is there's just some people that are just plain hard to get along with. And God's laws are easily summed up in one little command, to love your neighbor as yourself. Treat people the way you expect them to treat you. And of course, that's a lot easier to say than to actually do it. We tend to give ourselves exceptions to the rule. You know, I want them to treat me this way, but there's a reason why I don't treat them back the way I really want them to treat me. I find it fascinating to look at some history of criminals. How they justify themselves, no matter how heinous the crime they commit. In 1931, a dangerous criminal was captured in New York City in a large shootout. Two Gun Crowley was described as the most dangerous criminal ever apprehended. The police commissioner stated, "He will kill at the drop of a feather." What led to the shootout was that Crowley was snuggling with his girlfriend in a car in a country road on Long Island. A policeman approached the car and asked to see his license. Without a word, Crowley pulled out a gun and shot the officer repeatedly. He then jumped out of the car, took the officer's gun, and shot him again. Nasty guy, isn't he? Heartless. How did he see himself? "Under my coat is a weary heart, but a kind one that would do nobody harm." Then to me, I read that as a, what a mismatch. He was sentenced to death in an electric chair. And was there any remorse in his mind? No. "This is what I get for defending myself." That's what was his last words. And it's not unusual. Al Capone, a notorious public enemy number one, said, "I spent the best years of my life giving people the lighter side of pleasures, helping them have a good time, and all I get is abuse and the existence of a hunted man." Famous author back in the 50s, Dale Carnegie, noted, "People don't criticize themselves for anything, no matter how wrong it might be." And that's true. Very few people will look bad at themselves. And if we go over to Psalms chapter 36. Psalm 36. And starting at verse 1. "Transgression speaks to the ungodly within his heart. There is no fear of God before his eyes. For it flatters him in his own eyes concerning the discovery of his iniquity and the hatred of it. The words of his mouth are wickedness and deceit. He has ceased to be wise and to do good. He plans wickedness upon his bed. He sets himself on a path that is not good. He does not despise evil." There are some really bad people in the world. But it's easy to see that when we're standing on the outside looking at them. There's so many people, though, that go even further and are quick to spot wrong in other people Sometimes even when it's not there. For example, over in Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 7. And starting at verse 1. It says, the Pharisees and some of the scribes gathered around him when they had come from Jerusalem, and had seen some of his disciples were eating bread with impure hands, that is, unwashed. It never entered the Pharisees' mind that that by law what was being done wasn't contrary to the law. It was just different from their traditions. Disciples weren't, it's not a sin to forget to wash your hands before you eat. But when dealing with people, you're usually not dealing with creatures of logic. You're dealing with people who are emotionally driven. And it's almost a matter of, well, don't bother me with the facts, I'm mad. And people have a tendency to criticize when they don't have all the facts. They jump to conclusions. In fact, conclusions are frequently are just plain unfounded. If we go over to Proverbs 25. Proverbs 25. And we're going to start at verse 8. Proverbs 25, verse 8. Do not go out hastily to argue your case. Otherwise, what will you do in the end when your neighbor humiliates you? Argue your case with your neighbor and do not reveal the secret of another, or he who hears of it will reproach you and the evil report about you will not pass away. We need to try and understand people before we rebuke them. Not just what they have done, but we need to understand why. Beyond the surface of what's actually happened. But why is this going on? Dr. Johnson once said, God himself, sir, does not propose to judge man until the end of his days. And by this, he's referring to 1 Corinthians 4, verse 5, that God judges us in the last day. And yet, we're so quick to reach conclusions that we don't have when we don't have all the facts. We need to know why. And some people will find fault even though there's no harm that's actually been done. Take a look at Proverbs 3. Proverbs chapter 3 and verse 30. Do not contend with a man without cause, for he has done you no harm. Yeah, we find that sometimes people, it's just because it's not the way I would do it. I get notes even. I've just had a discussion just a couple weeks ago with somebody mad about something that was on the website. In fact, it was our homepage. Simply, he didn't like the order in which it was presented. And I told him it really didn't matter. And he got really huffy about it. Because, and he said it wasn't wrong. He just didn't think it was going to attract people. Okay. And I pointed out, well, it did attract some people. But some people will find fault even when there is no fault. But I think the sorriest of all people is the one who can't see himself in another person's shoes. The one who can't really understand it from the way somebody else is understanding. You may not agree with that person, but do you understand how they're approaching the problem? Take a look at Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7, verse 1. It says, do not judge so that you will not be judged. For by the way you judge, you will be judged. And by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, and behold, the log is in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, And then you'll see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Are there flaws in people? The answer is yes. We all make mistakes. Every one of us. But don't get so wrapped up in making everybody else better and never take care of yourself. The element that's missing is a concern for our fellow man. We want to tear down rather than to work at building people up. And to do that, we've got to realize there's some things that are just not worth fighting over. Take a look at 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy chapter 2. And we're going to start at verse 23. 2 Timothy chapter 2, starting at verse 23. But refuse foolish and ignorant speculations, knowing that they produce quarrels. The Lord's bondservant must not be quarrelsome, but be kind to all, able to teach, patient when wronged, with gentleness correcting those who are in opposition, if perhaps God may grant them repentance, leading to the knowledge of the truth, and that they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil, having been held captive by him to do his will. Notice the motivation in this passage. There's a concern for others, a desire to save them. And that's what should drive us in trying to help other people. Too often, though, it's all about my feelings. And as the proverb writer points out in Proverbs 29, verse 11. A fool always loses his temper, but a wise man holds it back. Or if you look in the New King James Version, it says, a fool vents his feelings. It's about expressing what I think and what I want instead of looking at what another person needs. I found a really interesting little story. It was written by Livingston Larned, and he titled it, Fathers Forget. He said, listen, son, I am saying this to you as you lie asleep, one little paw crumpled under your cheek and the blonde curls sticking wet to your damp forehead. I have stolen into your room alone just a few minutes ago as I sat reading my paper in the library. A stifling wave of remorse swept over me. Guiltily, I came to your bedside. There are things that I was thinking, son. I have been cross to you. I scolded you as you were dressing for school because you gave your face merely a dab with a towel. I took you to task for not cleaning your shoes. I called out angrily when you threw some of your things on the floor. At breakfast, I found fault too. You spilled things. You gulped down your food. You put your elbows on the table. You spread butter too thick on your bread. And as you started off to play and I made for my train, you turned and waved a hand and called, goodbye, Daddy, and I frowned and said in reply, hold your shoulders back. Then it began all over again in the late afternoon. As I came up the road, I spied you on the knees playing marbles. There were holes in your stockings. I humiliated you before your friends by marching you ahead of me to the house. Stockings were expensive, and if you had to buy them, you wouldn't be more careful. Imagine that, son. From a father. Do you remember later, when I was reading in the library, how you came in timidly and with a sort of hurt look in your eyes? When I glanced up over my paper, impatient at the interruption, you hesitated at the door. What is it that you want? I snapped. You said nothing but ran across in one tempestuous plunge and threw your arms around my neck and kissed me, and your small arms tightened with the affection that God set blooming in your heart, and which even neglect could not wither. And then you were gone, pattering up the stairs. Well, son, shortly afterward, my paper slipped from my hands and a terrible, sickening fear came over me. What was habit doing to me? The habit of finding fault, of reprimanding. This was my reward to you for being a boy. It was not that I did not love you. It was that I expected too much of youth. I was measuring you by the yardstick of my own years. And there was so much that was good and fine and true in your character. The little heart of you was as big as the dawn itself over the white hills. It has shone in your spontaneous impulse to rush in and kiss me goodnight. Nothing else mattered tonight, son. I came to your bedside in the darkness, and I knelt there ashamed. It is a feeble atonement, I know, that you would not understand these things if I told them to you during your waking hours. But tomorrow, I will be a real daddy. I will chum with you and suffer when you suffer and laugh when you laugh. I'll bite my tongue with impatient words come. I will keep saying, as if it were a ritual, he's nothing but a boy, a little boy. I am afraid I visualize you as a man, and yet I see you now, son, crumpled and weary in your cot. I see that you are still a baby. Yesterday you were in your mother's arm and your head on her shoulder, and I've asked too much, too much. I thought that was touching. It's something I wish I had learned when I was younger. The rebukes have their place, but far too often, with far too many people, we fail to examine our motivations. We fail to consider what it would be like to be on the receiving end. And we don't balance our words with praise. And we don't temper our words with love. Take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 13. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Starting at verse 1. If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I have become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. And if I give all my possessions to feed the poor, and if I surrender my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind and is not jealous. Love does not brag and is not arrogant. It does not act unbecomingly. It does not seek its own. It is not provoked. It does not take into account a wrong suffered. It does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. You know, when we realize that when somebody loves you and they want the best for you, even if they do have to rebuke you, you know it's for your best. That motivation should come across. In Psalms chapter 141, Psalms 141, and in verse 5, let the righteous smite me in the kindness and reprove me. It is oil on the head. Do not let my head refuse it, for still my prayer is against their wicked deeds. I'd rather be rebuked by the righteous. They at least are trying to help me get better. The righteous have your best interests in mind. A fool is basically just only lifting it up to bring it back down again. Take a look at Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. And in verse 5. It is better to listen to the rebuke of a wise man than to listen to the song of the fools. And in Proverbs chapter 27. Proverbs 27 and in verse 6. It says, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. A friend loves his friend. He tries to improve him. And even in the old law, in that boring book that we call Leviticus, that's so difficult sometimes to read through. But in Leviticus 19, Leviticus 19, look at verse 17. You shall not hate your fellow countrymen in your heart. You shall may surely reprove your neighbor, but you shall not incur sin because of him. You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the sons of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. When we understand that, then how we say things matter. We want to improve somebody, so we need to say it such a way that they will hopefully listen if possible. So the approach has to strive to not to cause a quarrel. Now, sometimes it's hard to avoid, but that's what you're striving for. So, like, for instance, in 2 Timothy chapter 2, 2 Timothy 2 and verse 23, it says, "But refuse foolish and ignorant speculations, knowing that they produce quarrels. The Lord's bondservant must not be quarrelsome, but be kind to all, able to teach, patient when wronged, with gentleness correcting those who are in opposition. If perhaps God may grant them repentance, leading to the knowledge of the truth, and that they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil, having been held captive by him to do his will." Hans Selye once said, "As much as we thirst for approval, we dread condemnation." See, we should realize that criticism encourages the people to try to justify themselves. They often dig in, hold back against it, because it wounds their pride. And, of course, pride is not a good thing. It's something that we all should battle. In fact, we don't want to be like the scoffer. The scoffer is a man who makes fun of anything that's not what he already believes. If we look at Proverbs chapter 9. Proverbs 9 and verse 8. "Do not reprove a scoffer, or he will hate you. Reprove a wise man, and he will love you." And yet, when we approach another with a problem, we should be sensitive to not necessarily get that other person's dander up as we try to work through that problem. The goal is to get a person to do better, not to encourage him to entrench himself and put up all his defenses so that he will never move. And again in Proverbs 15, this time, Proverbs 15 and in verse 32, "He who neglects discipline despises himself, but he who listens to reproof acquires understanding." I have an illustration of this that was written by Dale Carnegie. He titled it Hard Hats. George B. Johnson of Edna, Oklahoma, is the safety coordinator for an engineering company. One of his responsibilities is to see that employees wear their hard hats whenever they're on the job in the field. He reported that whenever he came across workers who were not wearing hard hats, he would tell them with lots of authority of the regulation and that they must comply. And as a result, he would get solemn acceptance, and often after he left, the workers would remove their hard hats. He decided to take a different approach. The next time he found some workers not wearing their hard hats, he asked them if the hats were uncomfortable, or did they not fit properly. And then he reminded the men in a pleasant tone of voice that the hats were designed to protect them from injury, and suggested that if always worn on the job. The result was an increased compliance with the regulation, with no resentment or emotional upset. The same goal was desired in both cases. A rebuke was delivered in both cases. But the result was vastly different because the latter method expressed concern for his fellow man. The earlier method only showed a concern for the rules and for the coordinator to look good at his job. So consider how our words resonate with other people. Take a look at Colossians chapter 4. Colossians chapter 4 And in verse 5, conduct yourself with wisdom towards outsider, making the most of opportunities. Let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, so that you will know how you should respond to each person. Now, this, like I said, not to say that rebukes are never given, or that we should never cause another person's pride to be wounded. There are times and places for everything. But too often we wound not because we think that's the best way to handle the particular problem, but because we're speaking without thinking about it at all. Again, we go back to Proverbs 15. Proverbs 15 and verse 28. The heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. And we all make mistakes. In fact, James talks about this in James 3. It's really hard to control our tongues. It's hard to think about saying exactly the right thing. But in James chapter 3, and in verse 2, it says, "For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. Now, if we put the bits into the horses' mouths so that they will obey us, we direct their entire body as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are also so great and are driven by strong winds, are still directed by a very small rudder, wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. So also the tongue is a small part of the body, yet it boasts great things." But in our desire to correct somebody, we should not justify our own mistakes to ourselves. Like I said, we all make mistakes. We all say the wrong thing, but we don't want to justify it. In Romans chapter 12 and in verse 3, "For through the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think, but to think as to have sound judgment, as God allotted to each person a measure of faith." Most of what comes out of our mouth is tearing down other people, and almost nothing builds another person up, well, then something's wrong. Paul said in Romans chapter 14 and in verse 19, he says, "So then we pursue the things which make for peace, the building up of one another." And then in chapter 15 and verse 2, he says, "Each of us is to please his neighbor for his good to his edification." And so Paul tells us in Ephesians chapter 4, and in verse 29, "Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, so that it may give grace to those who hear." When nothing's offered to improve the person, then something's wrong. We are to edify and comfort one another. One last passage in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 from our scripture reading. 1 Thessalonians 5 verse 11. "Therefore encourage one another and build one another up, just as you are also so doing. But we request of you, brethren, that you appreciate those who diligently labor among you and have charge over you in the Lord and give you instruction, that you esteem them very highly in love because of their work. Live in peace with one another. We urge you, brethren, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with everyone. See to it that no one repays another with evil for evil, but always seek after that which is good for one another and for all people. Rejoice always, pray without ceasing, in everything give thanks, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus." I hope you'll think about these things. If there's anyone here today who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ.